Punchline is a new movie about aspiring stand-up comics. My guest, Sally Field, stars with Tom Hanks. Sally Field began her acting career starring in the TV sitcoms Gidget and The Flying Nun. It took a while for her to be taken seriously as a film actress, but her work has been rewarded with 2 Academy Awards for her roles as a union organizer in Norma Rae and as a widow struggling to hold her family and her farm together in Places in the Heart. Field starred opposite Paul Newman in Absence of Malice and opposite Burt Reynolds in Smokey and the Bandit, Hooper, and The End. In Punchline, Sally Field plays Lila Kritzik, a suburban housewife and mother with a new interest, stand-up comedy. For several weeks, she's been leaving her husband and children in the evenings to try out her material at a Manhattan comedy club. But she's uncomfortable on stage, and her jokes get no laughs. The best comic working this club is played by Tom Hanks. She wants some advice, and he decides to give it to her. In this scene, they are on the train, as Hanks explains that good comedy is more than jokes. The funniest material comes from your real life. It has to be personal.
What if it isn't funny? You tell me to talk about my life, but what if my life isn't funny?
All of our lives are funny, babe. How about your kids?
3 girls.
Okay, all right. Big, little, what? Nursery school, babysitters, maybe?
Oh, God, they're gonna need one if I'm not home by 4.
All right, that's funny. Go with
There's
that.
There's nothing funny in that, nothing. The maid will leave and then the 2 little ones will be there all by themselves.
You have to think the comedy. Who's the babysitter?
Oh, just this kid that lives
comedy.
Down the street. I don't
comedy.
Even think I brought
comedy.
His number.
What's the babysitter's name?
I don't know. It's just
comedy.
This nice kid.
What's the babysitter's name?
Charlie Manson.
All right! That's funny.
That's funny.
You just wrote a joke, yes. Yes, Charlie Manson, the babysitter? Yes, that's funny. Keep going with it. Go, go, go. Go.
Honey, he's put X's on their foreheads again.
Sally Field, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Your character in Punchline, Lila Kritzik, she starts off as a bad, inexperienced comic and turns into a pretty good one. Were you tutored in how to be bad in addition to how to be good? Let's start with how to be bad.
No, I was not tutored at all. I just had a natural talent at being really awful. No, that was really easy. The hard part, of course, came in that my character's supposed to improve and be believable that she's on her way to being not bad. That's the hard part.
So did you go around to comedy clubs and start playing them, testing out the material you had to do for the movie?
Well, I wish I could say that, yes, I did. I was in every club every night of the week. The problem was is that I couldn't find the material. Both Tom Hanks and myself, Tom is in the movie as well, we both wrote our own stand-up with our own individual comedy teams that we had. And Tom, which says a lot about his character and person and mine, was out doing it every night. He had the comedy, he was honing it and crafting it and pushing it and pulling it and making it perfect, and I couldn't find my piece of stand-up until we shot it, which was at the very end of the film. So I worked on it about 6 months. Not that I was slow or anything, but it was hard.
What was so hard about it?
It's very hard to find. Comedy is a very personal thing, and it has to come from a person's life and a person's vision of the world. And it's very hard to do that and create that for a person that you don't know. I was doing it for a person that didn't exist, Lila. Now, I use that as an excuse. Probably if I had to do it for myself, I couldn't do it, which is the truth. I mean, I realized that, and I think I knew that before, but oh well. You know, doing stand-up takes a certain gift, and you can't really learn that gift. You can try to tap into the places in yourself that you find your own humor, but that doesn't mean that your gifts will ever, be the same as, say, Robin Williams or Roseanne Barr. You just can't make it happen just by asking it to. I think that in the film, Lila pulls it off, but Sally Field will never be up there again, you know what I mean?
Are there lines that you're especially happy with that you wrote?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wrote most of the stand-up at the end, mm-hmm. that you see. Most of that is mine. So when I hear an audience laugh at it, I kind of titter inside myself. Oh, gosh, that was funny. That's pleasing. That's really pleasing.
Well, I want to play a clip that we have from Punchline, and this isn't from the last performance that you're talking about, but this is from the first time that you, as Lila Kritzik, goes to a club and actually does good. Actually, like, does material that comes from her life and that makes the audience laugh. And here's a clip with Sally Field as Lila Kritzik from the new film Punchline.
happy career night because everybody's life is funny. Trust me on this. We are all God's little animated cartoons. This gentleman right here, sir, what's your name?
Murray.
Murray, trust me on this. When your life is funny, Murray, what do you do for a living?
I'm an insurance salesman.
You're an insurance salesman? Did you ever want to be anything else? Come on, think back with me. You're 4, you're 3, you're 2, you're a small child, you're dressing up, it's Halloween. You know, all the other boys, they're firemen, they're policemen, they're Zorro, they're Batman, and cute little Murray, whose mother adores him, is a...
an insurance salesman.
An insurance salesman? Murray, this can't be true. What, you dressed up in a polyester suit and you handed out cards with your name on it?
Was that part of the stuff that you wrote yourself, Sally Field?
Actually, that stuff, that's part of the comedy montage, we call it,
uh-huh.
Where the Tom Hanks character, who's very good at what he does, takes the Lila character to various clubs one night and won't allow her to use any of her old stupid jokes that don't work and just forces her to talk to the audience. So this is like when she's trying to learn what it's like just to talk to people and find the comedy in the air or from them and relating it to herself. And when we did that, we showed 3 different clubs. When we did that, most of it was improvised. We had various lines that we had found from my comedy team that we know we were going towards, but most of it was just made up on the spot. A lot of Hanks was in there, a lot of Tom standing around saying, why don't you say that? You know, okay, that's good, we'll do that. So it's just flying by the seat of your pants.
It sounds like the relationship between you and Hanks offstage was not unlike how it was in the movie, since he coaches you so much in the film.
You know, I don't think we saw that at the time because we were so involved in making it work. But now as Tom and I are going around and talking about the film, we sort of realize it's exactly what it was. I will never be as adroit as he is at it. And so he was constantly saying, oh, that's funny, do that. No, don't put that in there. Do this, and da-da-da. So I was really Lila to him.
So are you better at telling jokes now than you were before?
No. I'm a terrible joke teller. I can never remember the punchline. My buildup is all wrong. I did the movie because I love what it's about. And I took it on. I'm one of the producers of the project, so we took it into development. And I don't think I ever really looked at it as an actor till we were about ready to do the film. And I went, oh my gosh, I've got to do this stand-up. I saw it more as a producer and being about this arena, which I think is so fascinating.
For the 2 roles that you got Academy Awards for, your roles in Places in the Heart and Norma Rae, you played Southern women. In this role, in Punchline, you play a New Jersey housewife who's testing out her comedy act. She's from suburban New Jersey, and your clothes are very interesting in it. The coat that you wear is this long plaid coat with a fake fur, I'm not sure which, trimmed collar, and you have these big tortoiseshell square-shaped glasses, and I was wondering who chose the clothes and the glasses. Was it you, or did you have costume designer for that?
No, actually, I chose all the clothes for Lila. I just felt that she looked this sort of unusual way. I don't know that everyone agreed with me all down the line, but they said, okay, if you feel this adamant about it. I just felt that Lila was not, a real trendsetter here, and I didn't think she was a woman that was able to go buy a new coat every year at Bloomingdale's. I don't think every woman is, or even was the kind of woman that looked through the various magazines that tell us what we should look like every year. I think she's a person that got a comfortable coat 10 years ago. It looked good to her. It had a nice little fur collar, and she said, hey, I like my coat. And then I think that when she got to the club and wanted to be funny, I think she thought clothes would help. And she never really was with it enough to know that wasn't it. That her clothes did not look like the rest of the gang. And I felt it was sort of the character in this kind of feeble attempt constantly at being somebody else until the end when she just wears a nice simple black dress and just is herself. She's constantly trying to be somebody else. And as you know, you can't make it when you're trying to be somebody else.
My guest is Sally Field, who stars in the new film Punchline. As you mentioned before, your company co-produced this movie. Mm-hmm. When you saw the script, why did you want to make it and star in it?
Well, when I saw the script, I wanted to make it because I loved what it's about the sort of bittersweet world of performing. centered around stand-up. I loved the relationship between, or the potential of the relationship between Lila and Stephen, and that they, the need that performers have for each other. Now, that wasn't really there when I read the script, but we knew that it we could turn that into that. And I loved the Stephen Gold character, which was there, Tom Hanks' character, which I think is a fascinating look at a kind of performer, how this need to perform manifests itself on two separate people. In Lila's case, in a sort of healthy way, it fulfills her life and makes her joyous. And in Stephen's way, it's like a fix, and he's at an empty pit, and the more he gets, the more he needs. And it's a curious thing that the need to perform does to you.
When you're co-producing a film, you're the boss in a way. Did you feel like you were in an unusual relationship with the actors who you were working with because it was your company that was behind the movie?
I don't think so. I mean, I certainly never wore that as some sort of badge coming in. I was when we were on the set, I was an actor just like everybody else, and I mean, I had certain responsibilities that I didn't talk about on the set. I mean, I would talk over with the director or something or discuss certain things, but I never wore it around like, hey, look at me, guys. Tom would talk to me about it a lot because he, too, has a development company and is curious about, you know, how difficult is it when you're acting and all the things that actors are doing now. And he was asking one actor who has done it twice now about... how do you do it? So it's as long as you don't, like, you know, wear it around as if it means anything except that you're doing more work, basically. I think it works out fine.
I'm always interested to see if new films are running into problems with audience testing. Did you get into any problems with that yourself with this film?
Well, we used a lot of audience testing. We had to because it's stand-up, and you can't do stand-up in an editing room, and you just don't know what works. And it's very delicate because it's actually a drama. This picture is actually a drama about comedy. So you have to know how much drama to blend with the comedy, and do they understand what's happening, or is it getting confusing, and is the comedy funny? And I must say that the testing was invaluable to what was funny and what was believed and understanding what the film was about. It was, we tested quite a lot.
As a producer, do you think that you would cast yourself in roles that others wouldn't necessarily think of you for?
Oh, probably. Probably.
Is there such a thing as a Sally Fields role now?
I don't really know. I'm sure there is such a thing to some people in my industry. And thank goodness I'm not in a place now that if I don't think it's a role that I want to do, I don't do it. So I don't like to get pigeonholed, you know. Usually if they think it's a Sally Field role, it's something I wouldn't do in a million years.
Well, obviously it's important for you to produce movies. I mean, I assume that's why you're doing it. So do you feel like you have a better crack at the roles you want if you're producing the movie yourself?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think it's just a matter of having a better crack at the roles that you want. It really is a matter of creating projects that you want to be a part of.
Making sure these movies get made in the first place.
Yeah. The Lila character is not the most colorful character I've ever done, but the film is a really wonderful film, and it's something I'm very proud of being a part of. And I assume that the film would have gotten made someday had I not taken it on, but it had been around for about 10 years, so I have to in some way pat myself on the back and say, you know, it got made because I said yes, I want to make this movie. And the projects are just not around unless you find them or develop them or turn the town upside down and shake it and find these projects and see that they get done.
My guest is Sally Field, and she's starring in the new film Punchline with Tom Hanks, and they both play aspiring stand-up comics. Sally Field won 2 Academy Awards for her roles in Places in the Heart and Norma Rae. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll be back. This is Fresh Air. Sally Field is my guest, who stars in the new film Punchline. I'd like to talk with you about a couple of your previous roles. I thought maybe I'd play a clip from Places in the Heart, a role for which you won an Academy Award, and you played a widow in Texas in 1935 during the Depression, and you're trying to save the farm, which might have to be sold because you're broke and you owe money. So John Malkovich plays a blind man who's living with you. Danny Glover plays a man who was begging until you took him in and gave him a job on the farm. And in this scene, you're suggesting that they all try to do the impossible, which is to harvest cotton very quickly to try to win this cash award that's offered for the first harvested cotton crop.
Right.
You got 30 acres to pin.
Frank and Possum can help.
Well, that's not going to be nearly enough.
Pick 24 hours a day.
Did you pick cotton before? After about an hour, the hulls start to cut your fingers. Then by noon, both your hands are bleeding. Later on, your fingers start to swell. And after a little more time, there ain't no feeling left in your hands whatsoever. And I ain't even speaking about what it does to your knees. And I ain't even talking about what it does to your back. Now, we can't do it. Now, get that through your head once and for all. We can't do it. Now, you best stop thinking about it before you end up killing yourself.
Now, you listen to me. If we lose this place and you're going back to begging for every single meal, Mr. Wheeler are going to put you in the state home, and I'm going to lose what's left of my family. I'm not going to let that happen. I don't care what it takes. I don't care if it kills me. I don't care if it kills you. I'm not going to give up. And if the two of you do, you can go straight to hell.
I think a lot of viewers have probably started to think of you as Southern because of your role in Places in the Heart and in Norma Rae. Do you have any Southern connections?
Actually, I do have a strong Southern connection. I was raised by this sort of wonderful group of women that are my mother's relatives, my grandmother and all my grandmother's sisters, and they were all from the South. My grandmother was born in Alabama and raised in... She was born in Alabama, and she moved to South Carolina, and then moved to Texas. And my mother was born in Texas, so they were all very much Southern women, and that was my influence as a child. Even though I was born in California, they raised me, and I had a sort of Southern accent when I was a kid, just because I heard it all the time. So I know that these women were certainly extremely influential in my life as to the kinds of women that they were.
When you went up to receive your Academy Award for Places in the Heart, you said, sounding surprised, to the audience, "You like me." Was it hard for you to feel that you were respected in your field after the TV series that you started off with, the Gidget and the Flying Nun series?
Well, I'm sure that it was and has been in the past, but I think that my particular response to that was just, you know, flat out the sort of enormous feeling you get when either you're getting a standing ovation and you've just given a performance, or your peers, you realize that your peers have voted for you on such an important thing. It, as ridiculous as it sounds, it's an overwhelming feeling of, oh my gosh. And also there was a red light flashing and I had, you know, 2 seconds to say what was really in my heart or just BS everybody. So I just said what the bottom line feeling was, is this sort of overwhelming of a feeling of affection and gratitude and letting the people know how deeply it means to you, to any performer who gets that. Whether it be a standing ovation for a particular performance, or getting an Oscar, nothing feels the same to a performer.
Mm-hmm. TV audiences were first introduced to you in the role of Gidget, and I was wondering, you know, her personality as this pert, lovable teenager. Were you a teenager at all in that mode?
Oh yeah, I got Gidget because I was Gidget on one level. I mean, there was another dark level to me that stayed hidden, that came out in later work. But the level of me that was the easiest to present to people was the Gidget side of myself. You know, the all-American giggling little American girl, and I always was that. I fit into that mold so easily as a young woman growing up in 1964 and the late 1950s. It was someplace for me to feel that I was fine. You know, I fit. It was when Sandra Dee was the number one box office female star, and I seemed to be a place for me to live, as far as I knew, and all the other colors seemed to be totally unacceptable. So Gidget was very easy for me.
Then from Gidget, you play The Flying Nun, which I understand that you first turned down and then accepted.
Who wouldn't? I turned it down. I know that there are people in this country who like it. I don't mean to say that there's anything wrong with them, but I didn't like it. And I did it primarily because I was frightened.
That you'd sink without a trace?
Yeah, that I would. I had several people around me at the time who said, do it, do it. This is all you've got. And I think I was too frightened at the time to reach out for my dreams, like Lila does, and getting back to Punchline. But, you know, and that's what it's about, to have the courage to reach out for your dreams. When I was 19 years old and I had done my first television series, I didn't have the guts. I thought I had the talent, and I certainly had the desire to act, but I didn't have the guts to walk away from television and say, go to New York and study and live in a small apartment and do off Broadway, which I think somewhere was my dream, but I was frightened. I was frightened to leave. I'd never been out of California, I'd never been on an airplane, and I was really unsophisticated.
Well, you did something pretty gutsy shortly after The Flying Nun. If I understand this correctly, you fired your agent and your business manager after The Flying Nun, and I was wondering what the last straw was that made you dump them and find other people.
I think it was the third television series I did called A Girl with Something Extra, which, you see, you don't even know about. So.
That's right.
It had nothing extra whatsoever, except it was, I think, the last straw. It was the final kicker where I said, you know what, I've got nowhere to go except down. So why not just go for the things you want to be? What are you waiting for? And I think that was, I mean, it wasn't like one day I woke up and stretched and said, ah, yes, go for those things. I mean, it was gradual, but it you know, these things, it started to build. It took years and years of it sort of eating away at me and burning a hole in my pocket until I realized I had to make a move. I had to go point myself in a different direction.
What was your strategy for doing that?
I don't think I had any strategy at all. I think I was simply going on just sheer instinct. I don't think I had it worked out. I don't think I was really sure as to what feelings were going on inside of me. I was angry at myself and all sorts of things. I had two children. I was supporting the children. I was scared. You know, these things. And having children, you know, as people know, it changes your life. And I had two little children, and I think I just felt if I was capable of taking care of them, then I was capable of taking care of myself. And I think I felt I had to get out and fight for them. And I think that probably propelled me forward.
I think of it as being Sybil. I think of Sybil as being the role that really turned your career around. You got to play a multiple personality.
Mm-hmm.
And that was plenty of opportunities for great acting and something like that.
Yeah. Well, that was certainly my opportunity to really do what I had trained and worked mm-hmm. and so hard to do. I got a break before that, which really got me in to read for Sybil, which was in this little Bob Rafelson film called Stay Hungry with Jeff Bridges and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
That I think that was my industry kind of break, even though the public didn't see it. And then I got to do Sybil, and I think things started to turn, but it's all very gradual. I don't, you know, still it was a long time before Norma came along, and it's a long time of just, you know, having to be very certain that you're going to make it, that you've got it.
You just said a couple of minutes ago that children change your life, as we all know. Now, I believe you had another child just a few months ago.
Mm-hmm. 9 months ago, actually. And I know that he's changing my life and my perception of myself as we speak. It's just that I don't know quite I don't have any into it yet. You know, I can't look back and say, ah, yes, this is how it changed me. I don't know. I know it's changing me a lot. I just don't know what it is it's doing.
Can I ask a perhaps stupid question? You were in your early 40s, I think, when you had your baby, your mm-hmm. your third child.
Yes, and I'm in my early 40s.
Right, yes. I was wondering if you were concerned at all during your pregnancy or shortly afterwards about what effects the pregnancy would have on your body, because I know how conscious you have to be of your body and yeah. of how you look when you're an actress.
Well, actually, I didn't think of that a whole lot. I mean, there's a side of me that said, what are you doing? You worked so long on those abs, honey. Don't let them, like, fall apart like this. And then the other side of me said, who cares? You know, who cares about those things? Because, you know, a child is so much more important than you know, your stomach muscles. And also, you underestimate what a miracle the human body is. Because even at 41 and 3/4 here, my body is coming back together. I've hardly even worked out. I think it all has to do with where women are now. You know, we are much healthier than our mothers were at this age. And goodness knows we have worked out much more than they probably ever did in their lives as a general rule. You know, there's some women, I'm sure, who worked out a lot. And I think that our bodies, even at 41, are able to just sort of bounce right back if you pay attention to them.
I have one last question. Punchline is about to open. Are you going to read the reviews, or will you let somebody else do that?
That's an interesting question. I let somebody else do that. I do. I've learned throughout the years that even if it's a good review, there might be one little line or something that someone puts in there that isn't even about the film that an actor, and I am one of them, will cling to. Something that you will hurt yourself with that's destructive. I you know, something could be about my stomach muscles. Who knows? Something ridiculous or something not ridiculous that isn't important to hear. But I honestly believe, and they'll get me for this, most critics in this country have no notion as to what they're critiquing. They're really just saying whether they like the film or not, and then they talk out of turn about a lot of things that isn't what a critic should be doing.
Hmm.
So there you have it, critics all over the country.
Well, Sally Field, I thank you very much for talking with us about your new movie and about some of your life as well. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
And my guest has been Sally Field, and she co-stars with Tom Hanks in the new film Punchline, which she also co-produced. She and Tom Hanks both play aspiring stand-up comics. Punchline opens this weekend in a few cities and then opens nationally on October 7th. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.